Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HR Works Podcast, brought to you by HR Daily Advisor. The HR Works Podcast provides clear, relevant, and actionable information on topics that matter to you, the HR professional. When you're armed with the best practices and strategies to attract, retain, and engage top talent and deliver exceptional service to your organization, HR just works. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HR Works Podcast, brought to you by HR Daily Advisor. The HR Works Podcast provides clear, relevant, and actionable information on topics that matter to you, the HR professional. When you're armed with the best practices and strategies to attract, retain, and engage top talent and deliver exceptional service to your organization, HR just works.
Hello, and welcome to the HR Works Podcast. My name is Maddie Collins, your host for today. Our guest is Sarah Devereaux. Sarah is a leadership coach and strategic advisor with Third Coast Coaching and White Pine Leadership Collective. She's also an HCI faculty member. Sarah has been coaching, facilitating, and speaking for over a decade on topics like leadership, resilience, innovation, self-awareness, trust, complexity theory, well-being, systems thinking, and more. Her coaching practices focuses on the whole human being, mind, body, and heart, and is rooted in deep curiosity and compassion. Sarah spent almost 15 years at Google, concluding her time there as the head of executive development programs, where she was responsible for all learning and development for Google's most senior leaders. She also spent 2.5 years building an SaaS startup and is passionate about HR innovation and building strong people and culture teams. Sarah lives in Michigan with her family on a 20-acre farm.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on too. So, for our Now and Next event, we are focusing on pay equity and compensation. So to kind of kick off this conversation, I'd love to start with discussing some of the biggest challenges organizations face in establishing pay equity.
Yeah, juicy topic. So as part of the advisory work that I do, I often work with clients on their compensation strategy. And one of the things that comes up frequently is around transparency. And whether or not to make pay transparent across the organization, and especially whether or not to make it transparent across levels. And from a pay equity standpoint, the more transparent you can be, the better, because it allows folks to understand how they're being compensated and how their pay stacks up against others, not only within the company, but also understanding how their compensation compares with market conditions and with market benchmarks. So that's another challenge. So transparency is one, and transparency contributes to pay equity. I'm a big proponent of transparency. We talk about transparency a lot within many of the programs and offerings that we have at HCI as well, that transparency around succession planning or compensation or performance is really a sign of organizational maturity. So one challenge, transparency. I'm a big proponent personally, and we are as well at HCI. And then the other one is I often hear from folks that they're concerned about geographical differences in compensation. And there's a big debate going on. And I feel like this has been happening for years now, but especially as the pandemic continued to roll on and remote work continued to increase, the piece around whether or not the same job should be paid the same in different locations versus, you know, kind of the more traditional model of having different compensation bands for different geographies. So that's another piece that kind of gets really sticky. And it's difficult for organizations to make the call around what do we believe in. You know, so do we believe that people should be paid differently depending on where they're located? Or do we believe that people doing the same job should be paid the same way? And that comes down to kind of the equity question as well. So those are the two. I'm sure there's more that we could talk about, but those are two that I hear most often.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Like just speaking to the location-based pay scaling, the only person I know, at least personally, that has gone through that is my sister, because she was originally based in DC and then she moved out to Colorado, ended up taking a little bit of a pay cut just because whatever scaling they use for the standard of living, Denver was cheaper than living in DC.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've personally experienced this several times. So I moved from Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is where I'm located now, back home, all the way to Mountain View, California. So relocated to Silicon Valley. And I got a pay increase moving from Michigan to California. It was not nearly as much as the increase in the cost of living, to be frank. And then I moved from California to Colorado, and the decrease from California to Colorado wasn't even close to like the decrease in the cost of living. So our cost of living in Colorado was significantly less than California, and I only took like a 6% pay cut or something like that. So the other thing that I think is interesting around this, though, is that as people are continuing again to be doing, you know, the same job across all these different locations, I'm honestly a big proponent, unless, you know, as an organization, you truly can't afford it. But a lot of these organizations that do change compensation based on location can afford it. So we're talking like the Googles and the Metas and the Amazons. I mean, there's enough cash on the table that you can take your highest paid location and you can compensate the rest of your workforce, regardless of location, benchmarking against that highest paid location. And I'm a big proponent of that. One of the reasons, I won't go down too much of a rabbit hole on you, but one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about it is honestly from a DEI perspective. Like a lot of these locations that are lower costs of living are also higher populations of marginalized groups. If you look at places like Detroit, you know, I'm a proud Michigander. Detroit goes all the way back in my family tree. And Detroit is, you know, primarily African-American and has an extremely low cost of living compared to a lot of other big cities. You look at a place like Baltimore, right? Like really diverse population in Baltimore. You know, you look at even Atlanta, you know, Atlanta has great diversity and a much lower cost of living. And so you move from California to Atlanta and you take a huge pay cut. So as we continue to think about this from, you know, a more modern, I would say, like geographic, you know, lens, when you pay people more in these locations, you're pumping more money into those local economies and you're helping the local economy to thrive. So personally, I think people that are living out of Detroit and working for tech companies should be getting paid just as much as folks who are living in Silicon Valley or in Seattle or in Colorado. I mean, I think it needs to be more equal and that helps those economies to thrive.
Yeah. And that, like, I feel like it ties into that transparency point that you made earlier too. Like just the transparency in the DEI and the pay equity feels like it all goes hand in hand, just because like understanding that people come from different backgrounds, have different needs, have different, you know, costs of living, whether they have kids or don't have kids, whether they own their house or rent, like there are just so many different factors and so many different ways that businesses can make it more equitable in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's another great thing to consider, right? Is that people have different requirements. And a lot of people end up moving from higher priced locations in order to go home, you know, and you don't know what kind of financial requirements are go along with moving home. I mean, I moved home in order to financially support my mother. And so actually my bills went up, you know, going from Colorado to Michigan. And I'm not saying that we necessarily need to take everyone's life circumstances into account. But I do think that the location piece and paying less, in lower cost of living locations is a little antiquated. I'm hoping that that's one of those policies, that's going to go the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that too, because kind of like you touched on earlier, at the end of the day, you're capable of paying that higher amount. So why does it change based on location?
Right.
Speaking towards just these challenges, what are some tangible steps HR professionals can take to champion pay equity within their teams?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one thing to consider is really getting clear with your executive leadership team on their values and their philosophies when it comes to pay equity and when it comes to related topics. You know, we just talked about the fact that like DEI, right, like is a related topic, whether you're talking about, you know, marginalized groups as defined by race or by gender, then, you know, making sure that we are being clear around, okay, is this something that we value? And if it is, like, how do we make sure that those values are reflected in the policies that we create? So one thing, like getting clear on those philosophies and values and connecting them in with your policies. One of the biggest killers of culture is hypocrisy. So making sure that, you know, you're walking the talk, that what you're saying actually matches up with your actions is incredibly important. And pay equity is no exception when it comes to the importance of matching your words with your actions. Another thing is making sure that you've done your homework and that you understand what other organizations are doing that are similar to yours. So if you are a early stage, you know, pre-revenue startup that's primarily targeting, you know, Gen Z workers and you're in, you know, XYZ locations, making sure that you're getting some benchmarks that are similar to your size and stage and industry and not saying, hey, let's benchmark ourselves. You know, you're not going to benchmark yourselves against like Comerica Bank, you know, or Google. You know, if you're, you know, you're a pre-revenue early stage startup, like, yes, you're technically in tech, potentially, right? Like if you're
but
a SaaS.
But it's apples to oranges. Like,
it's not the
like
same thing.
If someone has, you know, like decades of history, how do you, you know, compare that accurately?
100%. And like, you know, Google is a wildly profitable, you know, company that's been around for almost 30 years. That's yeah, with like over 100
of their startup stage.
Yeah. Like what were they doing, you know, 25 years ago? So I think it's important to make sure that when you're benchmarking against actual like oranges to oranges, right? Apples to apples. I also think that it's really important to understand what the expectations of your workforce, your target workforce is. So you're going to have different expectations from like a Gen Z standpoint, or I'm a millennial, like I'm an older millennial, but I am a millennial. and I have different expectations too, you know, than let's say, you know, the Gen X or boomer population, right? So it's important to understand, okay, from a pay equity standpoint, from a transparency standpoint, from a location standpoint, the folks that we're targeting, that we're trying to hire, what are their expectations? And doing some market research around that. And there's so much of it right now too. There is no short of information when it comes to this stuff. So really doing your homework, aligning those values and those principles and those philosophies with your policies and making sure that your hiring plan is consistent with all of those things. So that you can, again, you can, if the decision is we will pay differently by location, like that's okay. Just make sure it's clear and it's consistent as you move through the hiring process.
Yeah. And just thinking about like compensation as a whole and what different generations expect. One of those things that I've seen lately in the marketplace is, you know, some people like older generations or people getting a start on retirement planning, like they're looking for 401k matching or IRAs and stuff like that. Whereas younger people like Gen Z might be looking more for benefits and compensation focused more around like student loan forgiveness or assistance.
Right.
Going back to what you said, like knowing what your workforce needs and wants from you and being transparent about it.
Well, and the other thing, right, like that is so, I love that point because like, you know, Gen Z continues to get a, in my opinion, unfair reputation for not being motivatable. Like they would just, it's so hard to motivate them. We just keep tossing money at them and they don't seem to do what we want. They won't work the 80 hours just because we're throwing more money at them.
Yeah,
and
but it's if like, you consider well, that there are a lot of different problems with that
like
set up already.
Well, here's the deal, folks. Like they're smart. Like I don't want to work 80 hours either. And like it gets down to a point where this generation of workers has decided, not everybody, right? Not everybody's the same, but a lot of them have decided that work is not the only thing in their lives. And bravo. Like, thank goodness. Like, well done that you figured this out. And so throwing more money at them and only using compensation as a tool to motivate is not going to work the same way that it may have in, you know, years or decades past.
Yeah. Even so, one of my friends, one of the benefits her company has is they've got like a stipend for educational programs. And initially it was just to, they didn't have like rigorous requirements for it. It was just to further your interest or your personal development in whatever made you, motivated and kind of leaned into that work-life balance. So like she, I don't know if she ever ended up doing it, but she was interested in, what's the word? Like tarot reading. Like that was her hobby. That was something that kept her like happy and engaged outside of work. But afterwards, they decided to completely shift it and just make it for furthering your career, which for some people, that might be exactly what they want. But for her in that position, she realized like, for me, the work-life balance is more important than potentially getting another like acronym to put at the end of my name.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think learning and having the opportunity for folks to learn and grow as part of their benefits, as part of their compensation, that seems to be something that folks are really responding to. I'm noticing a lot more organizations that are putting into place education reimbursement programs. Google had one while I was there. I managed it for a couple of years. And it was actually really, really good. And it was something that people really appreciated. Like this money, it's like a little savings account that you could just tap into when you wanted to further your development. And that's something that a lot of workers care about, but seems to be higher on the priority list for Gen Z collectively than perhaps previous generations.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You had mentioned earlier that there are just some really antiquated practices around pay equity and compensation that we're hoping to get rid of. And one of the first things that I can think of is, you know, the don't talk about what you're paid at work. So in that sort of vein, how can organizations create a culture of trust and transparency around compensation?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of just publishing what people make. Because if we don't have anything to hide, then why are we hiding it? So I honestly think that it should just be public information within the organization, what everyone makes. And I've seen this done in multiple ways. So I've seen it done, you know, in looking at different roles and different levels and showing what the compensation range is within that role or level. I would say that that's sort of like the junior level version. If you want to move up into varsity, you're actually going to publish the true salary, like the exact number of what somebody makes. And that is just openly available information. Now, when you do that, you do have to be sure that you're keeping an eye out for bad behavior. So I had a client that was fully transparent with pay, and he was sharing with me that some folks who had bad relationships with other folks on the team were advocating for those people to be paid less because
instead of self-advocating for them to get paid more.
Yeah, they were advocating like this person doesn't contribute. I've decided that this person doesn't contribute enough value that they should be paid at this level because they were comparing their own value with that other person. And then they felt like they were not being paid. And this person was getting paid more than the other person. They just felt that they weren't being paid enough more. And so, and he wasn't, you know, the leader that I was working with as an advisor, he wasn't handling it well. He's like, I don't know what to do. Like, should I do a reevaluation of this person's comp? And I'm like, no, you should make it extremely clear that we have a evaluation process to ensure pay equity. This is what it looks like. So that's another good tip, actually, that I'll come back to. But this is what this process looks like. And we don't tolerate people advocating for folks to be earning less outside of this process. Like, we do not change things outside of this process because he was actually entertaining it. And I thought that was pretty damaging. So you do have to be really clear. And so that's the tip I'll come back to just really quickly here. You have to be really clear about what your process is for reviewing pay and for ensuring that it is equitable, so that you don't get into a situation where you've made everybody's compensation public and now you've got people, you know, sort of like jealousy is creeping in, or, you know, other bad behaviors are starting to surface. You want to make sure that you've got a policy in place so that you can be clear on what reviews look like and what they don't look like, what input is welcome and will be considered, and what input is not welcome and will not be considered. And of course, it was a, you know, I'll just throw in the last little bit of fun detail. Of course, it was a man advocating for a woman to be paid less.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Unfortunately, that tracks. Oh, man. Yikes. Wow.
So much in there, right?
So much in there.
If we only had 3 hours to dig into all the problems with that.
Yeah. Goodness. There's so much to unpack there. Goodness. speaking toward, I remember you mentioned earlier when I asked this question that the exact pay, like the exact salaries for certain roles or levels of leadership is a lot more clear than pay ranges. And that got me thinking about how when people are applying to jobs across the country, there are different rules and regulations and laws about pay transparency. So for example, in Connecticut, where I'm located, it's required by law that you disclose the pay range, but it doesn't have to be in writing. It just has to be verbally expressed at some point during the interview process. Whereas I can't remember what states there are, but it does have to be like physically published. So do you have any like advice or best practices on how to mitigate the differences between different state and national laws when trying to develop a proper inclusive pay equity and compensation transparency system?
What a great question. The number one thing, right, is like, follow the law. Like, don't break the law. Like make sure that you are doing, you know, the bare minimum at a minimum. I, however, find that verbal communication around compensation is not the best policy. So if you are going to be transparent, put it in writing and commit to it. There's a lot of, again, bad behavior that tends to surface when we don't put things in writing. So even if it's unintentional, misunderstandings can run rampant. Particularly, I've seen this happen with folks who are ESLs, so English as a second language. And if they're applying to an organization that has English as their primary language, and there's sort of a less than clear commitment that's made verbally, that can actually be really confusing for folks because we're being less than direct and less than clear about the compensation. And so they may get the wrong impression just, you know, from a language barrier. Folks may get the wrong impression, you know, just, you know, generally too, even when they're speaking the same language. I just think it's really important. Like, if you're committing to transparency, then commit to putting it in writing. Again, if you've got nothing to hide, then don't hide it. And not putting things in writing allows you to potentially backtrack, and it gives you an out, right? Like when the offer comes through, being able to say, oh, I'm really sorry, we weren't able to actually meet that higher compensation. This is what we're offering you now. And they have no recourse, right? Because nothing was put in writing for them. So I think putting things in writing is really important. And then otherwise, just taking a really hard look at, again, your policies and your philosophy and seeing, okay, how does that map to the local laws, to local governance? And how can we take it a step further? So how can we show even, you know, if you're being transparent about pay, you're showing good faith, you know, as an organization to prospective hires. Mm-hmm. So how can we take that minimum amount that we're required to do under local laws and take it a step further so that that's actually a attraction, like talent attraction strategy. We don't just do the minimum here, right? We don't just do the minimum. We're committed to doing even better for you. So here's what the law is, and here's how we take it one step further, because that's how committed we are to pay equity. So it sends a message.
Yeah, definitely. It really kind of paints a clear picture about like the values and the culture and the trust you can have in an organization.
Exactly. And that's such a good additional point, Maddie, like that the way that you approach compensation and the way that you approach pay equity shows a lot about your culture. So think about, you know, the culture is not, you know, we know this, like culture is not words on a wall. Culture is not, you know, a set of values that we talk about at the all hands. Culture is not like a series of words that we tend to use often in order to describe ourselves. Culture is how the work gets done and how the organization functions. It's the policies, it's the processes, it's how what we say matches up with what we do and the tone of how all of that feels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like putting your money where your mouth is for compensation sense, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Except there you go. That's our number one tip, folks. Put your money where your mouth is. That's great. I love that.
Sorry, that got me.
Great.
Yeah. So as much as we've been talking about, you know, going above and beyond and really putting an effort into being transparent and embracing that culture of trust in pay equity and compensation, how can organizations design policies that are not only informative, but also equip employees with the tools and resources to advocate for themselves and their peers? Like you said earlier, having it in writing or having a written, well-developed understanding of how compensation is discussed and reviewed.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. I love this question because I think a lot of it comes down to that documentation culture. So putting things in writing. And specifically putting what I like to call working agreements in writing. So one of the things that I did in my time after Google was I spent about 2.5 years at a little startup. And it was focused on helping people to create better working agreements in order to create better ways of working, which is a cornerstone of culture. And the thing that I really learned there was how critical it is to create agreements that give people clear paths in terms of helping them to know what behavior is encouraged, is accepted, what behavior is not, and why. And being really clear about if this is your concern, here's what you can do about it. And here's what you can't do about it. And giving people as much leeway as possible. So one of the things that I always share with my clients when I'm working on creating working agreements with them, so I often will advise people in culture teams about how to create employee handbooks or how to, you know, write up working agreements that help them to understand how the organization and dictate, right? Like how the organization functions. And one of the things that I always say is, remember, you're not writing a rule book. You're writing a set of guidelines to help well-intentioned people who you trust and who you believe are smart and capable to make better decisions. That's what a working agreement is. You want to help them to understand where the hard line is for the organization, and then you want to put into place processes, policies, guidelines that help well-intentioned people who you trust and who you believe are smart and capable to do great work, to make great decisions and to do great work. So it's about creating guardrails. It's about creating kind of and defining the edges of the lane as opposed to dictating that everybody's got to go in the same straight line.
Yeah, it makes me think of like specifically with like child raising, like let your kid color outside the lines, but you still want to keep them on the page because you don't want your walls damaged, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had to actually put my children, I didn't do a good job with that parenting, that parenting challenge. I had to put my kids into a room that is the art room because doing art in any other part of the house resulted in me having to do a little painting, you know, later when all the walls were covered with hearts and raindrops and, you know, all sorts of things. But yeah, we actually have an entire room for the kids that is just dedicated to art because they were so outside the lines that it was not a possibility. So I think like, but that's the culture, right? That's the culture we want to create. So if we're bringing it back into parenting,
like you talked about earlier, it's just bigger than it might be for other people.
My hard line is you cannot do this outside of this room. Mm-hmm. But when you are in this room, go nuts. Like splatter the paint on the walls, get it on the floor. I don't care. Like, but this room is where that happens. Everywhere else, like we need to make sure that mommy's walls and carpet is okay and paint.
Yeah, you can only repaint a wall so many times.
But it's clear. It's clear where you can do these things. Exactly. So yeah, clarity around the policies is the biggest thing. Sometimes people will soft pedal because they don't want to like piss anyone off. They don't want to hurt people's feelings. And it's like the thing that annoys folks more than anything is a lack of transparency that is potentially even well-intentioned because you're trying to be nice. But like clarity is kindness. We don't need to be nice. We got to stop being nice because nice often means, again, that our words and our actions don't map up.
Right. And as much as we've kind of talked about the importance of transparency and being clear about stuff, what about the flip side of that conversation? What might be better left confidential with information regarding pay and compensation?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good question. I think it all comes back again, right, to that philosophy, you know, to those principles. And those are going to be specific to each organization. I've worked with, again, organizations who are only comfortable sharing bands, like salary bands. And let's be clear, folks, $130,000 to $265,000 is not a salary band. I've seen that before for roles, and I'm like, oh, come on. Like, that's ridiculous. $130,000 to $160,000 is a salary band. But $135,000 range. I saw this just earlier this
week. Yeah, if you're in a different pay bracket within the range, that's insane to think about.
If you're bumping people into a different tax bracket, your range is probably too big. Like, it's just, I mean, that's way too much. But 130 to 150, 130 to 160, that's like a reasonable amount, right? Or 250 to 280, sure. Somewhere between 20 and 30 grand normally is what I recommend. And folks are not comfortable like saying, you know, actual individual numbers, right? Some organizations will share base salary only, but they're not comfortable disclosing bonuses, or they're not comfortable disclosing stock grants. You know, if folks are being given stock grants, you know, throughout their employment and not just when they start at the company. So I think, again, it just kind of comes down to each company's individual level of comfort. I tend to be a fan of being fully transparent on total compensation and keeping that updated. But I know that that's going to be different for each one of my clients that I work with. So the first thing that I always do is I ask, like, what's your level of comfort with transparency? And let's walk through the different types of compensation that you offer. And let's really dig into your level of comfort being transparent with each one of those types. And then we can make some decisions around what we communicate, how it's communicated, how often it's communicated, and then make sure that those policies, those philosophies and principles, they're all clear and they're all clearly communicated to your staff.
Right. Yeah. So kind of speaking about that clear communication. Effective pay transparency doesn't start and end with just HR. It spans a multitude of departments. So how can HR partner with other departments like the financial and legal sides of their company to navigate that process?
Yeah, I feel like I'm such a broken record, Maddie. But
I'm just hitting home key points.
I mean, maybe like, yeah, I do. I'd love your opinion on this one too, actually. Because for me, again, it just comes down to like getting those policies really clear. So if you like the first step, right, in clarifying your philosophy and clarifying your policies around pay equity is to vet that and to really start getting information and input from those different departments, right? So if like your finance, if your CFO is like sitting there going, yeah, no, I'm totally against, you know, pay transparency. We can't tell anyone anything. And your chief people officer is like, everybody's salary, everybody, all the stuff, all the gump, it needs to be published, it needs to be updated, it needs to be perennially available, it needs to be evergreen. That's a really big discrepancy. So that's a conversation, right? That's a conversation that needs to be had between the financial department and HR and probably the CEO. And like, so those agreements, right? When I talk about working agreements, they're not just at the individual employee level. They're not just for communicating things to your workforce. They are also for aligning and getting consistent and getting agreement at that executive level and across departments to make sure we're all singing the same tune. Because if we're not, like, oh, how quick does that become apparent to the workforce that there is discord, that there is disagreement, you know, at the executive level, right? Oh, well, everybody knows that finance was really upset when we rolled that out. Like that just, again, it's a detractor. Like it starts to eat away at the culture, right? Those little pieces of discord start to eat away at the culture. So I think getting that agreement piece at the executive level is really important. But yeah, have you seen anything in the work that you do? Do you have any other ideas?
Oh, man, I'm pulling this from, I don't even know what sources or just general thoughts that I have about it, but I feel like when you're working in large teams, like in general, a good approach is the, you know, everyone's coming from different places. Everyone's got different perspectives. So if you're trying to reach an agreement, what's the nice to have? What's the need to have? What is the line there?
Sure.
So like what we talked about earlier, you know, follow the law, period. That's a really easy place to start. So that'll,
good,
you know,
one, folks. That's a good, yeah, one.
When in doubt, don't break the law. But that's, you know, just a very easy way to open that conversation. And in the example you gave, if finance is like, we can't publish everything, get down to the question of why. Why can't we publish everything? Or is it that you don't want people to know the exact numbers? Instead of, and at that point you could be like, instead of publishing people's exact salaries, why don't we go with the band approach so that people know the range? Just, yeah, trying to find compromise, trying to find middle ground, because transparency looks different for everyone on every single level. Just going back to like generational differences, what people want and what people need, and even, you know, going further, what individuals want or need. But when you're working with multiple departments, the approach of being transparent and communicating is just as important as when you're doing it on an individual employee level.
Yeah. Well, and something you just said really, really sparked a thought for me around something that, well, a couple of things. So the first thing is that when you are moving in this direction, right, you're like, all right, we are committed to pay equity and transparency scares the pants off of us. Like that seems like beyond what we're ready for, right? Even taking a baby step in the right direction and maybe starting with sharing those pay bands for salary and maybe some percentages, you know, for bonus or some ranges for equity grants, right? That could be a good step in the right direction. And then you can assess, you can reassess, you know, just because you do a little bit, you know, to start doesn't mean you can't do a little bit more later. So start off with bands or start off, you know, and then move to. So start off with bands and then maybe move to sharing the precise base salary information, but then keeping bonuses and equity grants confidential and see how that feels. And then maybe share a little bit more. And like, you can do these things as a stepped process, especially if it's really different than the processes or the practices that you've had in place thus far. And then the other thing that I was going to add in here in terms of like getting ready, right? Getting ready. We had talked about what homework, right? What things could HR professionals do in preparation for you know, pay equity, in preparation for more transparency. You want to make sure that you've done the research and that you've analyzed your data and you've identified any inequities and corrected them.
Yeah.
So if you're getting ready, right? If you're getting ready and then you want to own up to those inequities, ooh, that's the hard part. That's a big one. But you got to admit your mistakes.
But admitting those mistakes goes back to that area of culture. To be able to go to your employees and be like, hey, we've been reassessing our pay equity and we found issues. This is what we're doing to fix it. That is a great first step to any process, honestly.
Yeah. On average, folks, women are getting paid 12% less than men in our company, which is not uncommon. And we've identified it and we're fixing it and we're backdating. Like, so how retroactive are you going to be too? That's another piece from a culture standpoint. Are you, you know, if you've had this discrepancy for years and years and years, you're identifying it in July, let's say, and you're correcting it going forward. What about all that time that people have lost out on equal pay, that women have lost out on equal pay? So, you know, I had a client recently that we went through this process and I advocated, and to their credit, they did it. I was like, you need to backdate that. Like, you need to pay these folks, these women. And it was a problem with paying women fairly. You need to backdate that and retroactively adjust their compensation from January 1st. Like, that really sends a message. Like, we really believe in this and we're going to fix, we're not going to be able to fix all of it, but we are going to fix your compensation for this calendar year. And we're backdating all the way to January 1st.
Yeah. It's like an acknowledgement and a promise.
We really believe in this. We're not just trying to, like, you know, cover up the mistake, you know, or we're not just trying to fix it going forward because we started this process and oops, now we got caught. We actually believe that we should have been doing this differently. And we want to send a message around that. That builds trust. That builds trust. It builds culture. It builds engagement. It builds motivation. And you know what all of those things contribute to? Productivity and revenue. Like, you show people you're going to make more money. This is the other thing that I think people often forget, right? Pay people equitably and you're going to make more money. You're going to get more out of them because they believe in you. They believe that you're in it for their best interest and they're going to put more of themselves into their work. And we don't want it, you know, we don't want it happening in an unsustainable or poor well-being standpoint, right? We don't want people working that hard. But you're going to get more out of folks if they enjoy what they do and they enjoy who they work for.
Yeah. And it ties into retention too. If people know that they're valued and cared for in their organization, they're not going to leave. And I can't remember what the exact percentage is, but rehiring someone for the role is more expensive than just continuing to pay them because there's training, there's resources, there's the whole hiring process. Like, it logically makes sense to, I mean, it's human resources. Your people are your resources. They're your best asset and you need to treat them as such.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Okay. So with that last example, you touched on the client that you worked with. Oh no, that was your own company. Sorry. You touched on how you guys had issues with like gender discrepancies with pay equity. So transparency is obviously like just one piece of the puzzle. So how can organizations address other unconscious bias in the compensation decisions and recognize those mistakes?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think a lot of it comes back to taking the human decision-making, quite frankly, out of a lot of compensation decisions. One of the things when I was at Google that we started moving away from was allowing managers to have discretion in how they were awarding salary increases and bonuses and bonus amounts. It honestly, like, it felt really bad at first as a manager to be like, what? I can't recognize, you're giving me zero ability to financially recognize my star performers. And honestly, it took out so much of the stress of being a manager because you were constantly thinking like, oh my gosh, I think this person's really great, but is my own bias playing into this? Like, how much is my bias playing into that? Like, you were just constantly questioning your judgment.
Yeah, you don't have to worry if it's perceived as playing favorites or if that's actually what's happening.
Right. Absolutely. And they noticed that they were able to increase pay equity for women and for other marginalized groups by a pretty substantial margin when they took the human decision-making out of it. And they tied it. Now, you can't take it out of it entirely if you're in a merit-based compensation system. So if you're getting paid more when you have a higher performance rating, then there is at least some level of subjectivity that still plays into it, but it's a more indirect level of subjectivity. And therefore, the bias plays into it less. So I think like taking the human decision-making out of salary adjustments and bonus amounts and actually basing it on a set of metrics is a really powerful approach.
Yeah. And especially in this, you know, day and age where we're trying to find the right space for technology and automation and where to intentionally put the more human touches, it's interesting to find an angle where it's, you know, safer to take a step back and be subjective instead of objective about, you know, pay decisions.
Yeah. And I think like, you know, I'm not sure if this is something that's already happening. I have to imagine that it is, but this is a area that is just ripe for AI. AI can absolutely make these decisions for us in a far less biased way. Now, it depends on how that AI is coded and how that AI is built.
Still need checks and balances.
Yep. And ensuring that we are not building our bias into the AI. So that's really important as well, right? We saw how that went down with a particular organization's generated images just a couple of weeks ago. That was fun. But it's really important to make sure that we are not building our bias into the AI, but AI does have the ability to reduce bias in areas like compensation and total rewards.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we are almost at time. So is there anything that we haven't touched on with pay equity and compensation that you either want to go into or revisit?
Great question. I think like the thing that I would, I guess like that I would leave folks with here is it really comes down to doing the right thing. Like in so many things in HR, right? I mean, it comes down to being fair and to being ethical. Like we should not be paying people in who belong to marginalized groups, you know, women or otherwise, less than we pay, you know, other groups, right? Who are in the majority. Like a Black woman should not be paid less than a white man. And that happens like in a lot of cases. So I think like so much of it comes down to, yeah, you know what? It's kind of painful to have to face the inequities that we have either consciously or unconsciously created and at least to some extent allowed to continue within our organizations. Like it kind of sucks. Right? It kind of hurts. But it's wrong not to address these things. It's wrong to not ensure that people are being paid equitably, regardless, you know, of who they are. And again, in my opinion, where they live, and other, you know, defining features, right? So I think the biggest thing that I would want to leave folks with is, like so many things in HR, it really does come down to just doing the right thing and being a good, you know, organization, a conscious organization that cares about doing right by their people. And I promise you, if you do right by your people, if you start really thinking about them as the most important thing for you to be taking care of and for you to be considering in your business, you're going to make more money. You're going to be more successful. You're going to be more durable. You're going to be more sustainable. You're going to be more able to actually withstand the next pandemic, right? Because, you know, there's going to continue to be things that this world is going to throw at us over the course of the next, you know, I would say like 10 to 15 years in particular, I think could be very volatile. And you are more durable and risk resistant if your people are happy, engaged, and they trust you and they believe that you trust them and that you're treating them fairly. It's a good business decision.
It is, because you can't future-proof your workforce, your company, if you're ignoring the fissures and issues that already exist today. If you're not putting in the bare minimum effort to better yourself in the moment, you can't better yourself in the future without that basis.
And there are other things, like, for sure, that contribute to engagement and motivation and productivity, and thus the bottom line, other than compensation. Like, absolutely. But you still got to pay people fairly. Like, you can't, none of that other stuff matters if you're not paying fairly.
Exactly. Well said. And Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a really fascinating conversation to have.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.